Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Senator Mike Pelley, we talk about this ridiculous boondoggle spending deal in Washington, D.C. Then Garrett Ziegler, you got to support this guy. He's tough, he's methodical, and he has exposed the Biden crime family. Listen carefully and closely. He's really great. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and text these episodes to your friends. If you want to listen to these episodes advertiser-free while also supporting our program, our research, our team, our social media operation, go to charliekirk.com and become an exclusive member now. That's charliekirk.com, and subscribe and become a member. It's affordable for all income levels, and we have more and more material and stuff coming out on charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Joining us now is one of my favorite senators. He's a great man, full of integrity. I'll tell you, if we had 100 senators like Mike Lee, we would be able to restore the promise of 1776. He is terrific. Senator Lee, thank you for making time for us today. There's a lot of confusion about the quote-unquote deal that is being struck and the Senate's role. We have a little bit of time, so walk our audience through everything that is happening right now regarding the spending deal.
Yeah, so there's, I assume you're talking about the supplemental spending bill that deals with Ukraine and Israel and other matters and is trying to incorporate the border security package as part of the deal. With that deal, first of all, we have yet to see bill text. We have yet to see a bill, not regarding exactly what they want to get to Ukraine. We have ranges of numbers, but no bill text. And we have no bill text or even draft bill text that we've been able to see regarding the border security deal. So let me give you just my down and dirty analysis of what's happened. I think they're setting this up. They know that they don't have enough Republican support to make this truly broadly bipartisan in the Senate to fund Ukraine. And they want to have at least half of the Republicans in the Senate to vote to fund Ukraine. And so they're coming up with this series of promises about how they're going to secure the border as a condition for funding Ukraine. The problem is the price tag for that, we know, is going to be in the range of at least $106 billion. So they're essentially saying, if you want to secure the border, you're going to have to vote to fund Ukraine and a bunch of other stuff to the tune of at least $106 billion. But you're really going to want to do it because we're negotiating a border security deal that's going to make our border secure instead of having this humanitarian crisis and a state of lawlessness holding out across our southern border with implications in every state in America. Here's the problem with that, Charlie. Even the act of doing that, before we even get to the details of what might be in this bill and what we don't know about what's in this yet-to-be-seen, yet-to-exist bill, I struggle mightily with the very premise of this discussion, because the premise seems to presuppose that the problem on the southern border, the reason we have a humanitarian crisis that's enriching the cartels to the tune of many billions of dollars a year through human smuggling and indentured sex slavery and servitude, it presupposes that Joe Biden doesn't have the authority to fix the problem. It presupposes that all of this exists for want of adequate legislative authority in the executive branch, and that is false. Now, it's true our immigration code is a mess. It's true that our asylum laws, which are really what was at the front end that helped create all of this, they could definitely use some tightening. But that does not mean that the president is without authority to do this. And in fact, I'm absolutely convinced that between the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security, they have more than enough legislative authority to unravel this problem. And the reason is the asylum laws, which I mentioned as sort of being the seed kernel that led to this whole migrant process, it's discretionary. It says that the secretary may grant asylum if certain conditions are set. It does not say shall.
In order for us to get our border secure in America, we have to finance a foreign proxy civil war, of which, and Marjorie Taylor Greene made the excellent point this morning on Steve Bannon's program, I haven't heard it put this way, is resulting in the elimination of an entire generation of young men of Ukraine. I mean, the human cost of what's happening, thanks to our financing, it's cruel, it's sick, it's immoral. We are financing a deterioration campaign of young men across the board in Ukraine. And now they're drafting 40-year-olds. It's a generation devastated. And what does DC do? They say, oh, it's all in the spirit of democracy. All in the spirit. In order for us to get a southern border, and this is a repeated theme, everybody, the consensus of DC is indifference towards America and obsession towards abroad. Indifference about our own homeland and obsession about what happens internationally.
Number one, they're demanding that we vote for this $106 billion aid package, most of which would go to Ukraine. Other things go to some other stuff, although we don't have any of those details. And they're trying to extort votes for that, recognizing that that has become a little unpopular in many circles, with people realize we've given more money to Ukraine than any other country or every other country combined. And there's less than unanimous support among the American people for this. So they're now holding hostage border security, saying, in effect, we won't secure the border unless you do this. And meanwhile, they're negotiating a package that we haven't seen. They won't let us see it. It's still secret because it's still being negotiated with Democrats. But what we are hearing about it convinces me that there's nothing in there that would compel this administration to follow the law after this bill is passed, if it's passed, than they would be today, because they have laws that are on the books that would allow them to deal with this issue today. They just refuse to enforce them. Now, it'd be one thing if they were putting in place something that would say we will withhold funding that would otherwise go to Ukraine, such that the administration couldn't send that unless or until certain border security metrics had been achieved, unless or until we'd achieved operational control, or no more than X number of migrant encounters a day occurred. But there's nothing in there that does that. There's nothing in there that withholds funding for Ukraine or for anything else that's important to the administration if they don't enforce it. So they're asking us to trust an administration that has been hell-bent on one thing: open borders and lawless borders, enriching the cartels to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year. Look, we were not born yesterday. This is not our first rodeo. And the Biden administration, if it wanted to enforce the border, could and would do it. But there's a more dark, sinister implication of this here, Charlie, which is that if we dive deeply into this right now, we send the signal to the American people, to everyone, that if this bill fails, because it's going to have problems with it, I know that it is, we haven't seen it yet, but there will be problems. If it dies, this will make it that much easier for Joe Biden to avoid accountability for his own defiant, willful lawlessness, his own refusal to enforce the border. And they'll blame it on Republicans and say, oh, well, we could have enforced it if only Republicans had voted to fund Ukraine, but they're so bullheaded, we can't enforce it. And that is a lie.
Then what do you think is the legislative future of this quote-unquote deal? Is it going to be dead on arrival? Will there be any deal that is struck?
It's very hard to predict that unless or until we've seen bill text. Now, we've been told for many weeks now that we'll get to see bill text in just a few days or just a week. Or I heard last weekend that we would have received bill text by Wednesday of this week, meaning yesterday. And that didn't transpire. We're now being told that we're likely to see bill text next week, probably next Wednesday. I don't know when we'll see it, but until such time as we see it, it's almost impossible for me to handicap it. But I can tell you this. I see no realistic path to this bill passing in the House of Representatives. It may or may not pass the Senate, depending on what's in it, and how it's received will be determined by what's in it. But I don't see any clear path for this passing in the House, which begs the question, why are we doing this? Why are we giving President Biden such a clear layup, such an easy chance to score cheap political points by saying, oh, this darn crazy MAGA Republicans in the House of Representatives, if it weren't for them, boy, we'd have this border secure. But it's too bad. We should not be doing that. And that's exactly what's happening with this bill. I would love to be proven wrong. And if that legislative text comes out, and it really would necessarily send a strong signal and create a strong likelihood that the border was secure, then we'll be in a different conversation and a different set of considerations to weigh. But I don't see that coming.
Senator, thank you so much and keep up the great work. We'll have you on and we'll be watching very, very closely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Brand new year and a new year's resolution are here, and I have one you should make. Join me in donating to Preborn. Save babies by providing ultrasounds and be a hero for life this year starting today. Together, during the Sanctity of Human Life Month, we're going to save 35,000 babies to show the world that even if our government and our laws don't respect the unborn, we do. Your gift to Preborn will give a girl the truth about what's happening in her body so that she can make the right choice. What better way to start this new year than to join us saving babies? And $28 a month will save a baby a month all year long. A $15,000 gift, some of you out there might be able to do this, will provide a complete ultrasound machine that will save thousands of babies for years and years to come. It will also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. So start this year right by resolving to be heroes for life. Call 833-850-2229 or click on the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com. So check it out. Join me in donating and make a year-end gift to help save babies. I just made my gift. In fact, we're making another one before the end of the year. Check it out right now. charliekirk.com. Click on the Preborn banner. Isn't it striking what he was saying? It was kind of the buried lead in the whole thing. We don't have text yet. We don't have text yet. We don't have text. This is the way that Congress is so dysfunctional. Here you have an incredible senator, very thoughtful man. And he just says, can I see the bill? And here's the way it works. They're going to negotiate in some sort of gang, and then they release it, and you have 12 hours, 18 hours, sometimes 48 hours to read it, to really go through it. And they say, okay, up or down. What do you think, Senator Lee? Still don't have text associated. Still don't have text associated with the actual bill. We haven't really hit the Ukraine story for quite some time, but it's worthy of bringing it back up. People need to be held accountable for this. But no one will. Same way that Anthony Fauci fails upwards, the same generals, the same intel experts, the same defense contractors that have been profiteering off of this and eliminating an entire generation of Ukrainian men, they're going to get away with it. Now, I would love to have somebody that is a pro-Ukraine American or a Ukrainian American, because you know, when I came out with my opinion on Ukraine, I got some very, very nasty messages, very, very nasty messages from even donors that were Ukrainian. And they said, it's the most important thing. I said, okay, yeah, look, I understand your loyalty, the whole thing. I'm not going to disagree with that. But is there, I'm curious, is there any regret now that an entire generation of Ukrainian men are being destroyed? It's almost like a genocide of an entire generation of Ukrainian men. Mitch McConnell says this is the most important issue. Is there any regret? Is there any pause? Is there any desire for a peace deal? It was a dying country before this war. Terrible birth rate. Is there anyone that wears those ridiculous Ukrainian, you know, flag lapels on their suit? Do you guys have trouble sleeping at night knowing that you are using these poor Ukrainian men as shields for your failed project of NATO? Does anybody feel any guilt? I don't think so. I don't see any sorrow. I don't see any guilt. And Professor Mersheimer beautifully predicted this years ago. We've played the video many times. And again, this is where they get you into these thought-terminating cliches. They get you into the tyranny of binary choices, which is you're either on one side. It's either you are on the payroll of the Kremlin and you love Vladimir Putin, or you're 100% in the category of Slava Ukraine. And maybe there's a third or fourth or fifth. Maybe there's nuance. Maybe there's a gray area. Maybe you don't like Putin and you also just want peace because you're a realist and you think that bitter civil wars shouldn't involve the United States. But in DC, they don't want any nuance. They don't want any gray area. They want the tyranny of binary choices. And Ukraine is now becoming a failed vassal state. Failed. It is, and you know who's making money? Zelensky's cronies, those insiders, they are making out like bandits on American taxpayer dollars. Like bandits. And any one of you neocon hawks out there, some of which we've had on the show, and I'm asking them, how do you think it's going? You know what their response is? Oh, it's going this way because the West hasn't done enough. What a silly, baseless, ridiculous thing to say. But that's, of course, always the answer. Oh, $250 billion wasn't enough. All of NATO stepping up wasn't enough. So they've built their own escape hatch. They're just going to blame us for not wanting to send more weapons. You know, that's the way the neocons always are. It's always another surge. It's another 10 years. It's more weapons. And we've asked the question all along, and we were called Putin's puppet. Again, we don't have some sort of advanced master's degree in geopolitics, but we have wisdom on this show, and we have been right. What does success look like? What are you willing to do to get there? Should American troops be involved? Are you willing to sacrifice more than the Russians? Do you have a view of war that is similar to the Russians? What do the Russians want? What do the actual people on the ground want? How are you going to staff the army? How are you going to finance it? What are the implications if we continue this for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Is this fueling the rise of BRICS? Is this making the American dollar stronger or weaker? Is this increasing energy prices? Is this making Europe a more stable continent or unstable continent? How is this in the best interest of America to check against the Chinese Communist Party? Is the Russian Federation a bigger threat than the Chinese Communist Party? Should we be focused more on the CCP than on the Russian Federation? Is there a way to keep the Russian Federation in check? Are we subsidizing Nazi battalions on the road? You know, I find it so funny. The Anti-Defamation League, everyone is so up in arms about anti-Semitism. Meanwhile, we are giving awards and subsidizing the Azov battalion, which are legitimate Nazis on the Ukrainian side fighting Russians. And yet DC, they don't answer any of these questions. They run to the hills. They never want to answer it. And they are perfectly comfortable. I want you to understand the moral tragedy here. They are comfortable and happy using Ukrainian young men as human shields for a game of Risk 5,000 miles away. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you tired of not getting a good night's sleep? Well, my friend Mike Lindell has created the perfect solution. He didn't just stop at the pillow. He also created the Giza Dream bed sheets, made from the world's best cotton called Giza. These sheets are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. And for now, a limited time, you can get 50% off the Giza Dream Sheets with prices starting as low as $29.98. These sheets come up in a variety of sizes and colors and have a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Take advantage of this amazing offer. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Podcast Square and use promo code Kirk at checkout. You can also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow 2.0 mattress topper and MyPillow towel sets. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. I love MyPillow, and I surely hope you guys check it out. Don't wait any longer to get the best sleep of your life. Call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com. Use promo code Kirk. Support Mike Lindell, my good friend and great American patriot. Remember, the sale won't last forever. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Joining us now is Garrett Ziegler. Garrett, welcome to the program. So, Garrett, I was texting with Marjorie Taylor Greene yesterday. And I gave her some feedback. I said, look, I love the spirit. I love the gusto. One thing I wish she would have said is instead of saying, hey, Hunter Biden, you're afraid of conservative women, she should have said, hey, Hunter, you're afraid of people who have read the Marco Polo report. Your thoughts, Garrett Ziegler.
Well, we're grateful for that. And I think one day you read, I think, directly from it after he was in.
That's right. I did.
And I'm very grateful for that. And I have a copy.
We have one around here. By the way, I have to watch myself. I feel like I need to take a shower. And, you know, I'm not Catholic, but like whatever form of confession I have to go to, it's pornographic. It's disgusting. It is lurid. I don't even encourage people to read it because I want to protect your soul. Garrett.
We tell them to just read the first section because it's just the business related crimes. If people say that, then I say, then don't go to the drug and sex, which are like pages 300 to 550. Just do the business related crimes. And I think that's what the Congress is focusing on, to their credit. And, you know, I have to give a shout out to Anna Paulina Luna, who offered Jamie Raskin a physical copy. We sent a link to the e-reader version to everyone back in October of 2022. But Jamie Raskin was very interested in getting the contents of the laptop. I think he should go to the shop owner for a copy and then take our dossier. Of course, fully aware that Jamie Raskin is not interested in the truth, but rather posturing. But nevertheless, I do want to thank her. And, you know, I think our secret is not a secret at all. We're just very dogged. This whole issue with the invoices from Nathan Wade to Fulton County and the Biden laptop is just a case of us playing with the Rubik's Cube longer than other groups. And I think there's so much there that we could probably spend a whole segment on just the business related crimes.
Yeah. So let me, I want to play a piece of tape here. This is very important. The media narrative, they're playing into it, and Jill Biden, they need to try to frame Hunter Biden as a victim, when in reality, he's the perp. He is the criminal. I want to play this. Again, if you're part of the uninitiated, you have this, he's just a crack addict. He's just all this, and he's just a beautiful person. And why won't they leave him alone? Play cut 88.
How have you been coping personally with the onslaught of accusations against your husband and your family, including and especially Hunter?
Mika, I think what they are doing to Hunter is cruel. And I'm really proud of how Hunter has rebuilt his life after addiction. You know, I love my son, and it's hurt my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm so concerned about, that it's affecting their lives as well.
Wait a second. You mean hurting your grandchildren that Hunter Biden didn't even want to acknowledge of the sugar mama that he had in Arkansas, that grandchild, Jill Biden? Garrett Ziegler.
Well, I'm glad she used the word hurt because of that old saying, the truth hurts. That's all we've put out, the contents of her son's laptop. We've never made anything up about Hunter. We've never stretched the truth. The truth is that that woman, Dr. Biden, in quotation marks, doctor, she is married to and has a son engaged in federal felonies, ranging from money laundering to sex trafficking to FARA violations. And it's ironic that Jill is speaking about this because her first husband is a big fan of Marco Polo. Had lunch with Bill Stevenson. He called me up and we've become fast friends. He loves our work. So Jill's own ex-husband doesn't believe this stuff. And I think that any objective observer knows that we're not trying to make fun of Hunter for the sake of making fun of someone. This man's 53 years old. He's treated in the media like he's 13. This is someone, again, who committed business-related crimes that have an effect on our national security. This is not, and I think it's immoral to engage in pure ad hominem attacks. The thing that they're mad at is the revelation of the truth. If her grandchildren are hurt by this, they need to go to their father and ask, why did you engage in these FARA violations? Why did you launder money? You had no experience in Ukraine, Dad. You couldn't even speak the language. Why were they paying you $83,000 a month to serve on a board of a Ukrainian-based energy company? These are all sober, fair questions to ask. But when you have Mika and other total bozos doing the questioning, it all becomes about, you know, Hunter, this 13-year-old child. He turns 54 in 3 weeks.
That is such a great point. He's framed as if this guy is just like a prepubescent, like he just had his 19th birthday and he's trying to find himself. He's 54 and he winds around as if, you know, he's been on a pub crawl at Ole Miss and he's just, you know, just lay off. He's trying to find himself. This guy's 54 years old.
We're not in the business of making fun of college sophomores, man. That's not what we're doing. If Hunter,
such a great point.
You know, if Hunter were pictured with a keg at Georgetown, that's not a story. This guy was 45 when most of the FARA violations went down. And what this report does is soberly goes through that. So, for example, who precisely from Mexico was Hunter serving as a foreign agent for? Well, their names are Carlos Slim, Miguel Alemán Velasco, Miguel Alemán Magnani. And of course, Joe is seen giving these people tours of the White House press briefing room. So again, Jill needs to address the facts of the business related crimes. I know, and you know, that she is not going to do that. This is all propaganda. But I think when the political contemporary pressures go away and people see this with clear eyes, it might take 15 years. But when they do, they'll realize that you and I and all these other people were right on the money. Her husband, the woman who was just speaking, her husband is the chairman of the FARA violating scheme. So, of course, she's not going to be able to see this clearly. And, you know, there are many reports that Jill is the one pushing. Obviously, Joe wants to do it as well, but Jill is pushing him into the public square. And so her own power and prestige, we can say that she has that. In some quarters of the country, she does, obviously at MSNBC. That her own self-interest is in keeping this scandal at bay. If people start digging into Hunter, they're going to find Joe. And if they find Joe, that might hurt his reelection campaign. So she has she's just going after her naked self-interest. And frankly, Bill Stevenson gets that. I didn't know we were going to be talking about Bill Stevenson, but I'm really glad we are, because her own ex-husband, who, by the way, her divorce proceedings, this is news. I don't think this has ever been covered. Her divorce proceedings with Bill Stevenson, she was represented in those divorce proceedings by Mel Monzak, the president's power of attorney. So Mel Monzak, who was Joe's old law partner, who has been his power of attorney since 1986, represented Jill in her divorce proceedings with Bill. So it just goes to show that Bill hasn't lied about a thing. They were together before they were divorced. And then Joey got his buddy, his law partner, to be Jill's representative in the divorce proceedings.
Garrett, just because we have people that come in and out, and our audience has grown unbelievably since the last time we had you on, remind people what you have done here, the methodical facts you've compiled. And then take about 2 minutes and then talk about how you are currently being sued because of it. Just kind of refresh our audience on both of those very, very important elements here. Then I want to get into some details later on. So please do that.
Yes, thank you very much. So my group, which is called Marco Polo, is about a dozen guys. And we started a 501c3 in the summer of 2021 with the primary purpose of going through the abandoned laptop of the U.S. president's son. And by going through, I mean, we literally read 128,000 emails. And then we put those emails online. And you can download them and look through them for free at BidenLaptopEmails.com. But we went through the device and we went through it with an eye towards any criminal activity. So our report, which you can read for free online at the e-reader, BidenReport.com, it only goes into the criminal activity. There is some stuff on the laptop that is not in our report just because we thought that it's not a crime and there's no public interest in it. But we found through that investigation, and we took about 15 months to write it, we really crowdsourced a book advance in reverse. We released the report in October of 2022 and we put it online for free, and it details 459 violations of state and federal laws and regulations. Now, the Bidens aren't implicated in every single one of those. We counted, and it's over 400, but it's not all 459. And the point in delineating that is that this is really a nonviolent RICO enterprise. The irony is not lost on us that the very statute that they're using in Georgia to prosecute former President Trump, that statute at a national level should have been used on the Biden's FARA scheme. So Hunter Biden never stopped being a lobbyist. You know, he was a lobbyist.
So I have this right here, by the way. I have it as a handy dandy deal. And it's an unbelievable work you've done here, Garrett. And they're coming after you really hard. Again, I try to stay away from the lurid stuff. These people, just forget the criminality of it. The degeneracy, the outright sickness there. And by the way, I'm just going to say there is, how do I say this without getting sued? Read it. There's some weird stuff going on in that family. Right?
Allegations.
I'm just saying there's some weird stuff. You guys can fill in the blanks. There's some weird, weird stuff. I'll leave it at that. I can't even look at this. This is so sick. And then I want to get into the outright criminality. Hunter Biden is not a victim. Joe Biden is not a victim. These people are scum. These are bad people. They shouldn't be running our country. They have a dark soul. I don't say that lightly. You read this report. If anyone thinks that you're going to vote for Joe Biden, by the way, if you know a Christian or someone's going to vote for Joe Biden, say, hey, do you know about this? Can you read this and tell me in good faith? Can you get through 5 pages without feeling as if you have to ask the Lord for forgiveness and say the Lord's Prayer? I can't. This is a sick, sick thing. And this is a cabal of satanic people running the country. I don't say it lightly. I need to talk to you about Nathan Wade, because we're on that story like white on rice, like a dog with a bone. But just one piece of evidence, and just seeing this just ticks me off. The media, they are so fake. They are so fake, and they are bad people. Page 24. Remember this Politico story? Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinformation, dozens of former intel officials say. Natasha Bertrand is a bad person. She is a wicked, wicked individual. She is a wicked person for writing this. This was direct interference into the election. She said it was Russian disinformation. And by the way, I encourage if Biden is the nominee, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the DNC. I want any Republican that's a press pass to the DNC in Chicago, just walk around with this. And if you do an interview with Morning Meek or CNN, just say, hey, let's go to cut 328, right here. Let's go to 328. Show, don't tell. Okay, Garrett, a little bit there. Then let's talk about Nathan Wade. We're running out of time.
Just real quick, 30 seconds. One project that we're trying to do, we sent the e-reader to every congressman on the Hill, every single one of them. Went on Legistorm and found each of their chief's email address, sent the link, did that in October 22. One project we're trying to do is get a physical copy, not just the e-reader, but a physical copy to every single congressman. Costs about $24,000, but we need to do it. It's $535. Obviously, we're going to include the Senate as well. And that's one thing we're trying to do in 24. I want to hand deliver it. I don't even want to send it through the...
If Turning Point Action can do that, let's talk offline. I'm happy to help raise some money for that, because this is so important. I'm so sick of the patty cake happy talk, and they sit on their hands and enough. Okay, so Garrett, let's put that aside. Help Garrett if you can. We're going to have him on more. So important. Nathan Wade, you're one of the people that helped uncover this. Is this right?
Yes.
All right, so tell us about it.
So we didn't have access to the filing before he filed it. All we did was we looked through the PDF that Mike Roman submitted. So Mike Roman is one of the 19 co-defendants in the Fulton County case. He made a motion a couple days ago to have the ridiculous prosecution and indictment dismissed, in part because Fannie has this illegal, illicit relationship with Nathan Wade, who is a contractor. And what we noticed, and the reason why I think we were able to find it, is these line items in this invoice that you have on the screen there, they're not OCR enabled. So you have to literally go through the document. You can't just type in, White House, because you can tell it was scanned. It wasn't, entered in exactly like on a, Microsoft Word thing. So these were submitted by the special prosecutor, by the contractor, to Fulton County. And I think Mike Roman got them because he subpoenaed them very smartly, right? Because he has subpoena power to see what the prosecution has. And we just found it. We found White House on two different occasions. So what this does is it exposes the lie of Joe Jen Psaki and Karine Jean-Pierre that they have nothing to do with it. This is the White House counsel, Joe's own people, coordinating with Nathan Wade before Donald Trump and Mike Roman were indicted. So somebody's lying in all of this. I love this catch 22, and that's why I'm so excited about these two line items. And hilariously and tragically, if you're a taxpayer in Fulton County, you subsidize this. Nathan Wade billed you to meet with Joe's own prosecutors to talk about this. So the first thing, if I were a Republican on the Hill and I texted one of them and told him this, you need to be subpoenaing Jonathan Sue, who is now at Latham & Watkins, but was at the time in Joe's White House counsel's office, and he was meeting with the National Archives on the federal case. So Jonathan Sue would be my first suspect to go question. Because if it's the White House counsel's office, it's probably him. He's a private citizen now, so the DOJ can't say that he has presidential immunity. And it wasn't even comms with Joe Biden. So Jonathan Sue has no no defense. He should answer questions under oath on when he spoke with Nathan Wade. Nathan Wade says it was on May 23rd, 2022 and November 18th, 2022. And he billed $2,000 on each occasion. And again, one of these meetings, one of these rendezvous, the one on May 23rd, 2022, according to Nathan Wade himself, again, these aren't my documents. This is what Nathan Wade submitted to Fulton County. He said he traveled to Athens, Georgia. We looked up the U.S. Attorney's offices in that federal district, and sure enough, they have a U.S. Attorney's office in Athens, Georgia. It's on the third floor of an old federal building. So we put it on our Twitter page to show people that this is likely where the rendezvous went down.
Garrett Ziegler, excellent work. We're going to talk offline. If we can help with the project, we will. I think we should do some more stuff together. Help out Garrett, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.